from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
I'd argue that there is no better place to be in the world on a sunny day than the Seattle area, right here in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. It is the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, everybody. Travis may fill in for Ursula. Good morning, Travis.
Good morning. I've got a little bit of a sunburn to prove that I was out in that glorious sun this weekend. It was beautiful, and then it was cold.
Yeah.
And then it was rainy.
Yeah.
And then it was beautiful again.
Right,
we got all four seasons.
You know, you know what I love about you, Travis? I love that because you're out in the sun, huh?
Yeah.
I love that you haven't come up to me not one time, and Chef knows exactly what I'm going to say right now. I love that you didn't come up to me one time and put your hand next to mine and says, CG, look, I'm getting close to you.
Never.
Chef, did you know I was going there?
Oh, yeah. Never.
Chef, how many times have you seen that happen?
Good gracious.
More
don't
than
do
once.
That. Don't do that,
okay,
people.
Okay. Real quick before we get off that, PSA, don't do that. Don't do it.
Yeah, no.
Don't put your fist next to him, your hand next to him. See, I went got a tan. I'm
don't
close to you, my friend. Oh, a lot of stuff going on in the show today. At 9:33, was it a good few days for Dave Ryker when it comes to his potential run for governor? And so we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the endorsements and who the GOP is going to be endorsing, all that good stuff and more. But right now, good morning to you, Brother Nick.
What up, what up?
Let's get to it. Top stories of the day brought to you by Way, Scar 40, Susu, and Auburn.
This is our top story this morning. You heard it on Heather's newscast. Now we're going to dig into things. A man is dead after police say he was stabbed at random while gambling inside a local casino. Auburn police say this happened about 1:30 early Sunday morning. This man in his 20s was standing at the tables at the slot machines inside the Muckleshoot Casino Resort when another man apparently came up from behind with a knife and stabbed him. Now, here's what a witness told Cairo 7 TV about what happened next.
They were just screaming, and the guy took off his shirt and gave it to him, and he started, like, just pressing on it.
So bystanders jumped in, tried to help here, but police say that man who was stabbed did die at the scene. The alleged attacker here, later arrested, is expected in court today. Colby Crossley, the Auburn police spokesperson, saying so far they don't know of any connection between these two men, and right now they don't have a motive.
Random attacks are so rare. Like I said, most of the time it's targeted. Since I've been here, which is almost 3 years, I haven't heard anything like this happening.
Now, so far, the casino has not commented about this publicly either.
Yeah, well, we're going to be finding out more about this. I'm sure they're going to be doing their due diligence on this topic. But it's interesting hearing it now to being called random. I have a couple sources of people that work in and around the Muckleshoot, and they don't think that this does appear to be random. That is not a random attack. I think, Travis, first, let me say this. My thoughts and prayers go out to this young man's family. This young man was 29 years old. I don't care. There's no justification for anyone losing their life. So I'm really sad to hear about that. And I'm sure this was something traumatic for witnesses to see at that time. But it makes it a different story when you hear random, right? Now you're thinking maybe you have plans to go to the Muckleshoot. And you're like, well, wait a minute. This is random. And so I want to see what's going to happen when it plays out. But when you start thinking about randomness of something like that, I know when I first heard about it, I heard about it being random. And I'm like, so the alleged suspect is 31 years old and the alleged victim is 29. So it's kind of similar in age. And so right now there's no prior contact to what they're saying. But I just wonder if we'll find out differently. But it's still a sad situation.
It is a sad situation. And you're right. The randomness. I mean, the police spokesperson here is makes a very good point. Random crimes are honestly, they're incredibly rare.
Yeah.
This kind of violent crime, I've been in the news business for 25 years, and they are just, I can think of one case in my brain
right. That
sticks over my career where it was truly, genuinely, dude walks into the front yard and, like, attacks.
Sure.
Unless there's, like, you know, mental health issues here, sometimes that can lead to randomness, but random is a very, very rare thing. So I think your point is well taken here, that police have a lot more investigating to do here, mm-hmm. a lot more work to do here to hear, you know, what was there, even if it was just a, you know, moments before previous interaction,
sure.
something like that, that could have led,
sure.
Not to justify an attack, obviously, mm-hmm. but like there can be an explanation versus the frighteningness of I'm standing at a slot machine and I get stabbed.
Right.
That doesn't happen.
Well, you've been in the news business a long time. You know, right now it is random, right? So everybody that is hearing about this story is like random. Like when you say random, like when I first heard about this last night, it was, oh yeah, somebody just walked up to him and just stabbed him right in the neck. Like, wait, what?
Right.
So that part of it, that's a huge story. If and when there is, oh, okay, this is what happened, and if it comes out to be, turns out to be that it's not random, the majority of people won't hear that part of it. They might just go with the first part, which is the thing about random that sticks out. So we'll get on to the next topic. What do you got?
This story coming to us from Pierce County. A Pierce County elementary school teacher who is also a volunteer pastor at a church in Gig Harbor pleading not guilty to 9 counts of child molestation. We're talking about 34-year-old Jordan Henderson, arrested last week at his Gig Harbor home after investigators say 5 students from Evergreen Elementary School, where he teaches, accused him of inappropriate touching. The mother of one of the victims here speaking at that bail hearing. Here's some audio from Como 4 News. News.
Hope that you will take into consideration the innocence that's been stolen from these children, from my daughter. And I hope that you would set a high bail. My child has nightmares. And she won't say his name. She just says, my nightmare was about him again.
So the bail was set by the judge, $100,000. Henderson was ordered to be on electronic home monitoring and to stay away from kids. He also has been ordered not to attend his church because kids may be present there. Now, that connection to the church is important here. Henderson is a volunteer pastor at Wellspring Fellowship Church, where his father is actually the senior and primary pastor. The elder Henderson posting on the church's Facebook page, writing in part, and here's the quote, "I know Jordan to be of the highest character and quality as a man. He is a great husband, a great father, a great teacher. He and his family have the full confidence and support of our church." The church members, by the way, packed the courtroom during Henderson's initial appearance.
I think that statement is trash. I think that is garbage. I think that the representation of Wellspring Fellowship Church is awful. The fact that the pastor, who was the father of the alleged suspect, to have the audacity to write that terrible, terrible letter right there. And it says, "I know Jordan to be the highest character and quality as a man. He is a great husband, a great father, a great teacher. He and his family have the full confidence in the support of our church." So if you are a member of Wellspring Fellowship, your pastor just told the world that the son, the alleged suspect, has the full support of all of you at that church. In this response, not one time do they send any prayers to the alleged victim's families. None. Not any, hey, let's pray that this investigation is done well. You could have left out all of that. Now, as a father and as a parent, I don't disagree with you wanting to support your child. But as a leader, as a pastor of a church, you take that time to send that response with no acknowledgement of the alleged victims, no acknowledgement of their children and families that are impacted by this. Travis, this story makes me so mad.
And the details, if you read the court documents here, the 5 girls who have come forward, first of all, investigators believe there may be more. So they're asking folks who have any contact with this this man, Henderson, Jordan Henderson, you know, talk to your kids, like ask about any contact that they may have had. Come forward if there's anything else. But in the court documents, some of these girls they knew what was happening and they were looking out for each other. Watch out for this teacher. Watch out for the touching. And apparently these one of the girls was even told by him, again, according to the court documents here, this is just what teachers do. This kind of touching is just what teachers do. If the touching that a teacher is giving a child is giving them nightmares, that is not what teachers do. I also just need to point out something. I was looking in the, you know what's interesting here is Jordan Henderson doesn't seem to be a drag queen. Doesn't seem to be a trans person. And I keep hearing all about how drag queens and trans people are like attacking our children. And I just was wondering if maybe I missed it in these court documents, because I keep hearing about how we need to, you know, penalize drag queens and trans people because they won't leave our children alone. I don't hear a lot of people saying pastors and teachers, but that's interesting. They're just pointing it out.
Cook, Travis, cook. We can move on to the next one.
Can I just mention something real quick, though? Mm. Silence within churches when things like this happen continues to be a problem. It continues to be handled internally. And if you have ever been at a very special sermon on Sunday, I've been at one of these sermons.
You
right?
have?
Yes, I have.
Let me hear it.
Where the pastor was found to be engaging in relations with someone who is not his wife, right? Not criminal behavior, but this is how it happens. You know, the pastor gets up and he shares his heart and he says to the congregation, folks, I have been led astray. We are all sinners and I did X, Y, and Z. And the Lord has found it within him to forgive me just as he's forgiven all of your sins, right? This happens in issues of molestation, right? You have a tearful confession in the pastor's office, perhaps a mediation session with the parents. Sometimes a young lady is told, perhaps you should not dress provocatively, right? And then it's just back to business as normal. The whole there's this whole catharsis process of forgiving and then bringing back into the fold. And before the facts are even out in this case, this father, this lead pastor who is supposed to shepherd his flock, says, we support someone who has been accused by multiple girls, like 9 and 10 year old girls, of molestation. That is awful.
Mm. You know, I know, I don't know if you guys, that's a great point, Chef. I was just thinking about times that the ladies in the church have been going through divorce. And how, like, sometimes the ladies will get shunned by the church because they're getting in a divorce.
Not welcome in this congregation anymore?
Yeah, I've seen. I don't know. I'm not saying it, you guys. I'm just telling you guys my personal experience. I'm not trying to speak that on you. I'm just telling you that I've seen women not invited back to the church because they are going through with the divorce. But then you see sometimes the pastors are, it was just a moment of weakness, and then they're just, here's the sermon you're good for. Okay, next, what do you got?
One of the largest owners of hospitals and medical clinics in our region being ordered to pay employees hundreds of millions of dollars in back wages. A judge has ordered Providence Health and Services to pay more than 33,000 hourly employees more than $200 million in back pay because those employees apparently were willfully being shortchanged over the last number of years. So let's start back in 2021 when a group of nurses, technicians, medical staffers, and hourly employees sued Providence, and the policy here was around rounding and break times. The judge in this case has concluded there is evidence that wage violations by the hospital system were illegal. Now, initially, damages were set at about $100 million, but the judge here ruled that the hospital was doing this to employees, and here's the key, willfully, which means by state law, that amount of damages has to double, which gets us to that $200 million mark. The Seattle Times reports that staffers were unpaid for more than 234,000 hours over roughly 5 years. Providence, by the way, says it's planning to appeal.
When we hear of employee theft, or when we hear of I saw someone at the Rite Aid stealing from the store, or I saw someone stealing food from the store. We go crazy about that. But when we have employer wage theft that happens, it's, I've always talked about this, Travis. It is just bothersome that it's not really a huge deal. It's bothersome that it gets to be business as usual. And in this scenario, specifically with Providence, right? If you check in and you clock in at 6:53 a.m., they round you up to 7 a.m., right? But when you get ready to get off, and let's just say you clock out at 7:08, they will round you back down to 7.
Right. They're stealing time from you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's just a little here, a little there. Multiply that by hundreds of employees, and you got a little savings of money right
there. That's not stealing. That's just an accounting error. It's a software issue, right?
Except it's not. This actual system actually counts by the second, and they could have that data available to the second if they wanted to. They're just choosing not to.
Yeah.
What would happen to an employee if they had been stealing time from their company for 5 years?
Prison.
Huh. Can I just point out also, this is a Catholic institution who wants to tell women what to do with their bodies and trans people to do with their bodies. And I'd like to read some Bible verses. 1 Corinthians 6:10 says, "Nor thieves, nor greedy, nor drunkards, nor slanders, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God." Or 1 Timothy 6:10, "For the love of money is root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." Ephesians 4:28, "Anyone who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work doing useful things with their hands, that they may have something to share with those in need." I could go on and on and on.
Hold on.
Just saying.
Hold on. Travis, what's going on today? What's going on?
Look, the truth of the matter I'll just share with all of you is I did the news for Dave Ross all last week, and I just kept it all in as I was reading these stories.
Okay.
Now I get to be on this show, and I get to be like, oh, no. Oh, you want to come at me?
Yeah.
You want to come at my people?
Yeah.
You know, how about Exodus 20:15? Oh. You shall not steal.
Isn't that in the 10 rules?
I'm pretty sure it is.
You know what's interesting? And I'm only going to ask because, Travis, you don't see the text line. I do. Right? I just want to know, why did Travis get so many of you upset when he says it wasn't trans people? It wasn't a drag queen. I mean, are you upset because that narrative, like, kind of gets thrown in the water? Are you upset because that was true and there's another discussion that's actually more real than the other? I just find it interesting. But again, look, I thought I usually be the one cooking, but Travis, something, boy, you cooking this morning. So, anyways, coming up next here on the G and Ursula Show, did the state Washington GOP basically give the state of Washington the bird? Well, we'll do that next. G and Ursula with Travis. It is the G and Ursula Show. Travis Mayfield is in for Ursula today. So Dave Reichert says the state Republican Party is in such disarray, he no longer wants the party's endorsement for governor. On Friday, the candidate committee ruled his most serious challenger, Simi Bird, ineligible for the endorsement for not disclosing a 1993 larceny conviction.
In light of some information, the candidate committee determined that Simi Bird was not forthcoming in the vetting interviews.
Now, the GOP candidate committee then, Travis, check this out. They declared
the committee has voted to pull the governor's race from the ballots, and we will not be endorsing a governor at this convention.
But a majority of delegates voted to reverse the decision and endorse the MAGA candidate.
For governor, the endorsed candidate is Semi Bird. Yeah!
Now, Dave Reichert gets on with Fox 13 and them, Fox 13 News, that is, and he's not seeking the endorsement of voters. He's seeking the endorsement of voters across Washington, but not his own party.
The party has been taken hostage by a small group of people.
Now, Travis, hold on. Stop. Wait a minute. Dave Reichert said that the party has been taken over by a small group of people. Now, when I said that in the past, people said I was crazy. Your thoughts on this?
I mean, look, I'm going to be honest and defend this process. I think that this is exactly what a political party, this is what happens. Like, this is, it's a messy process. I mean, we live in an age where we want party conventions now to be a coronation of someone and to have all of our, not have our dirty laundry aired out there. But in the past, a political convention was like a brawl. It was like a all-out fight. It was like a ugly back and forth. I mean, that's what politics used to be. Today, we haven't lived in that world traditionally, and we're seeing it again. But does Dave Reichert have a point here? I mean, that's for the Republican Party in this state to decide. Who are they? And if they're not what happened at the Republican convention, then where is another party to step forward and do this? Is Dave Reichert going to go? Is he leaving the Republican Party? Is there a new centrist party being formed? I mean, if you're going to operate in this the system that we have right now, that is who the Republican Party said they were. They went through the convention process. This is the candidate they've endorsed. I mean, at some point, like, either work within the system or create a new system. Otherwise, this is who the Republicans are telling me they are.
I'm glad you just said that. You said this is who they're saying that they are. I came in this morning with a question for, I would say that this question would be for those that are Republican, for those that are connected to the GOP. And this is a legitimate question. Before I ask it, I want to just give a quick opinion. Of the two, Semi Bird and Dave Reichert, in my opinion, if I had to vote or someone that I thought best represented a candidate from the Republican Party, it would hands down be Dave Reichert, and it's not even close. But it seems to be, and my question is, what is the true representation of the GOP? Is it because here is a candidate now that has been endorsed by the state Washington GOP, who is a mega candidate, right? And the most likely presidential nomination is, of course, himself, Donald Trump. So is that, because they seem to say that it's only a small group of people that have taken over. Am I to understand that the small group is literally has just flat out control of this party?
Right. That's what I don't understand.
So I really don't understand. And so you mean to tell me,
right,
that we're going to Lauren Culp this thing all over again? Really? Like, Semi Bird, I don't care if it happened in 1993. This dude couldn't work at a bank today. But you guys want to really give him the endorsement for governor? Like, how can you be taken serious when this happens? Like, I think that this is an embarrassment. I think that Dave Reichert not getting the endorsement from the GOP of Washington is an embarrassment. And of course, Dave Reichert is like, oh yeah, I don't want that endorsement anyways. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. It would be good for that to happen, but I just think this really shows how messy it really is.
And it's not an accident. That's the thing. Like, happens once, fool me once. I mean, this is the party showing us who they are. That's what I really, that's what I don't know. So my message to the Dave Reichert, to his supporters, for the mainline, the rational Republicans that I know are out there.
No doubt.
I am friends with you. Yep. Where are you and what are you doing? I keep hearing this rumbling. And I mean, I guess we'll have to wait and see where the votes are when the primary is. Will Republicans actually vote for Dave Reichert? And will they, you know, have a rational candidate?
Well, he's polling 6-1. Against Semi Bird, I mean, amongst Republicans.
I hope that that's true, but after watching what's happening, so at what point do you say, well, why is the party doing this? Like, at some point, like, how is the party apparatus even useful?
Because Dave Reichert has not endorsed Trump. He has opposed him. Jamie Herrera Butler, former Washington State representative, now running for Washington Lands Commissioner, showed up at this convention, too. She tried to give a speech. She was booed. About a third of the audience stood up and turned their backs on her because she voted to impeach the former president. I mean, that's the litmus test.
The party apparatus seems broken.
All right. If I say this, am I out of bounds by saying to the Republican Party, the GOP, that the MAGA side of things is absolutely destroying your party? Is that fair to say? Because
unless it's what you want.
I was talking to, going back and forth with, I mean, like, I don't want to mention their names, but with some Republicans in this state that you all know
of. Yeah, same. Me too.
That are like, I just cannot believe what's going on here. Like, I personally don't know anyone that's like, yes, this Semi Bird, this is going to be great. Not one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think this was really bad. All right. Coming up next, we do need to talk about, here, Travis, we're going to talk about the salary that is needed to live comfortably in every U.S. state here. We'll talk about that next. Gene Erston. Gene Ursula Show. Good morning, everybody. Travis Mayfield is in for Ursula. We will be talking about a jury selection that begins today in the trial of an Auburn police officer. We talk about that at 10. But right now, question for you. How much money does it take to live comfortably? Now, I'm going to tell you, and we're going to tell you how much it takes to live comfortably in each state. The state of Washington ranks 5th behind Massachusetts, Hawaii, California, and New York. Here in the state of Washington, you need $106,000 a year as a single person to be comfortable living in this state, according to the MIT Living Wage Calculator. MIT is going off the 50-30-20 budget. That's 50% of your money towards needs, 30% towards wants, and 20% towards savings. If you want to weigh in on this topic, we'd love to hear from you. 888-973-5476 is the text line. Travis, what are your thoughts on this, brother?
I mean, it's interesting. You know, there's the idea of like the singles tax to live by yourself. You basically have to pay more for groceries, more for rent, more. You don't have someone to split stuff with is the idea here. But I was looking at this top five, and these are all states that I think a lot of people want to live in. There's some basic like supply and demand here. Massachusetts, Hawaii, California, New York, Washington. You know, these are very populous places and they have popular destination. They're places people want to be.
Right.
And then I was looking at the bottom of the list. And I mean, this is no shade on these places, but Arkansas, North Dakota. These are places that have smaller populations. Fewer people have chosen to live in those places. So there is a little bit of just sort of supply and demand at play here, I think. If suddenly everyone decided that North Dakota was this incredible, amazing, fabulous place that they wanted to live and all of Gen Alpha was moving there.
Yeah.
Cost of living would probably go up there. So at some point, that's kind of what's at play.
Most of the time, I believe that where you live and where you choose to live, I think, is a determination based on quality of life, right? Like, for an example, I know it sounds good for theater and to talk shows and all that stuff. Like, well, I'm moving from Washington because their policies, or I'm moving from here. I'm sure that there are some that do. For the most part, you're moving for either proximity to family or to a job or cost of living being better. I did come across the top cities that people are moving from and the top cities that people are moving to, right? The top cities, six cities that people are moving from: New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, and Seattle. Mm. Where are they moving to? Number one, Phoenix, Dallas, Texas, Austin, Texas, Denver, Colorado, Charlotte, North Carolina, Las Vegas, Nevada, and Tampa, Florida. Those are the cities that they're moving to. I'll say this, Travis. Here, specifically here, it is becoming really hard to live here, I think, for most of us, right? Unless you're in the top 1-2%. I'm not talking about you, but I'm just talking about, just for the most part, every single day, every part, like the persons, the people that you see at the grocery stores, right? Decisions are being made. Decisions are being made at the pump. And what I mean, what do I mean by decisions? Decisions like this, like today's Monday, you go to the pump and you start saying to yourself, okay, I'm going to fill up right now. It's okay. The car is filling up. Okay. What do I have to do the rest of the week? Okay. I got to take Joey to practice. That's real stuff right there, right? And then when you go to the grocery store, you're thinking about decisions are being made. Most people, when they go get ready to buy something here in Washington, you're thinking about it subconsciously. And so I'd say $106,000 for a single person, I think, sure. But the part where it says 50% of goes towards needs, sometimes that 50% just can go towards mortgage or rent. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that threshold is getting higher.
I mean, I would also say this is for Washington State, not for Seattle. Because I don't think a single person is going to survive at $106,000 by themselves in the city of Seattle. You want to get an apartment on Capitol Hill? A studio apartment is like $2,000. I mean, it's crazy, the rents. But which reminds me of a story I think we may be talking about Tacoma being like a hotspot for rents.
Yeah.
So I think that's coming up next hour.
Folks, we may be talking about Tacoma. Shout out to all my brothers and sisters down in Tacoma. Y'all know how I feel about T-Town. Coming up next here on the G and Ursula Show, jury selection will begin today in the trial of Auburn police officer Jeff Nelson. We will be talking about that and how long has he been awaiting this time. Is he on administrative leave? We talk about all of that next. G and Ursula with Travis.